accession number 11748, rule 7.
Dana Ismail Khan, rule 7. So, the evening was very, very grim. We sat around British officers, young chaps, and one young officer who had come to us from India just about a week ago, called Jackie Rios. He was about 21 years old. And I was very dejected. So two or three other officers from Garhwal Regiment got a bit drunk. They began to sing the rude songs, keep themselves amused. I was very dejected. I was about to cry. Jackie Rios told me, he said, "Look, old boy, smile, don't worry. This war is being fought by many people. They will go on. We are prisoners of war. We might survive and go back." I said, "Well, you see, I have great ambitions. I want to fight this war to its completion, see, not to give up in the middle." He said, "Well, he's 21 years old. He wasn't cut out to be a soldier. But he fought. Now he's a prisoner of war. He's got plenty of life in front of him." His pep talk didn't help me one bit. Anyhow, we went to sleep. In the morning we woke up and everybody got busy to clean up. We all cleaned up. In the meantime, we received orders, whenever we see a Japanese, we should salute, regardless of his rank. Just keep on saluting. And they would also impress them with our excellent discipline. This was their demand. And you would do that. And when men are marching, they should march in, not alone, straggling, but in groups. Officers should position themselves in places where they could control their troops. Men should sit in their company positions, absolutely full of discipline, no nonsense. And so that was how we spent the day. Then the orders came that every company, every battalion, will give their nominal roles by companies under their classes, like Dogras and Sikhs and Punjabi Muslims and Pathans and Jats and all that, under their own respective officers. Every officer will join his own tribe. A Pathan will join the Pathans, Punjabi will join the Punjabis, and so on and so forth. Our Hindu officer had been captured the day before, 2 days before, and so was Burhanuddin. And I was a Pathan, Captain Durrani was a Pathan. So the Pathan said, "You will come with us?" We said, "Naturally, we can't tell a lie." But the Punjabis came to me. They said when I was posted to the battalion in 1940, I was posted to B Company, then I commanded D Company. And I speak Punjabi, so I should go with them. I said, "Look, Japanese have got an uncanny way of finding it out. If they found out that I'm a Pathan and posing as a Punjabi, it won't do me any good." The Dogras, a few Dogras who were not captured, they came to me and said, could they join the Punjabi company? I said, "No. If they found out you're Hindu Dogras, they'd be not good for you. So let's go about it as the Japs have told us, something like that, and we have been told, as we have been told by high command." So we prepared our nominal roles. Another very bad night was spent. In the morning we said farewell to our British officers, tearfully, goodbyes. The British officers went one way, we went the other way. We were told to go to a place in Singapore Island called Farrer Park. Farrer Park. It was a school, double-storied building, and in front was a big, huge playground. In the playgrounds, about half the size of a polo ground, they packed 45,000 of us. We sat cheek by jowl in our battalions by companies, and sat. And then we saw activities of Indian officers, Sikhs and Hindu officers, some Muslim officers, with armbands written FK. So I asked a Sikh officer, Tail Singh, who was a regular cadet with me at Dehradun. I said, "Tail, have you joined the bloody Japs?" He said, "No, no, I haven't. We haven't." I said, what is this FK? He said, FK is Fujiwara Kikan. There was this Major Fujiwara who was in charge of this intelligence operation in Malaya to subvert the Indian Army. He denied the fact that he had joined the army. He said, no, they're helping the Japanese for administration. Because you're so many of you have been taken prisoners, damn it. He said, it's out of their hands. So we know the language and we know the troops, so we are going to organize you. I was very, I wasn't convinced. Then activity in front of us in that double-story building took place. There was a Captain Mohan Singh of the 1st 14th Punjab Regiment who was captured in Chitra in the first Japanese major attack against the 11th position on the west coast, north of Penang, on the Malayan mainland. It was apparent that he's in authority, in command. Other junior officers who were captured up country was running around him, carrying out his orders. Then Japanese arrived, and the Japanese went upstairs. There were activity around the Japanese. There was one in particular, Major Fujiwara, a handsome Japanese, very neatly dressed, in the loose-fitting Japanese uniform, and with his little cloth cap on his head, sword, and a sturgeon whip, black sturgeon fish whip. He had a cut on his chin, gave him a cruel aspect to his face, and there was an interpreter with him called Lieutenant Kuniska, a little Japanese, he was interpreter lieutenant. And they began to talk. First, before they started giving, in the meantime, we were getting orders from upstairs, bled at us with loudspeakers. Discipline, order, freedom, patriotism, the British are gone, fight for your freedom, things like that. And then, suddenly all necks were turned towards the rear. And it was a lone figure walked up. A British lieutenant colonel, who later we discovered was Paddy Hunt. He was from the 3rd Indian Corps headquarters, a cavalryman, Indian cavalryman. He had his forage cap on his head, blue and red, and loose shirt, sleeves and trousers. And he walked through us, alone. He was told to walk, and he went up to the building in front, went upstairs, and stood there with this Japanese. And the interpreter's voice boomed, and the others, then Urdu it was interpreted, that this Lieutenant Colonel Hunt, the senior British officer, has got orders for you people. Listen to him. And in perfect Urdu, Paddy Hunt said, in Urdu, I shan't repeat Urdu, but I'll give you the English translation. He said, today we are handing you over to the Japanese authorities. From now on, you should show discipline, good order, and you'll obey them, and obey their orders, whatever they are. Now that was given to him to say so, or he said on his own, I don't know. But that created a lot of misunderstanding. It conveyed to the troops, illiterate troops, Indian troops, that they said, we are handing you over to the Japanese authorities, obey their orders. What he meant was to obey your orders and maintain your discipline in the camps. But the rest of the things, which, anyhow. So, he having said that, he saluted, facing us, he saluted, his last favor. And he went down, and he came right through us again. A dejected figure, tall, handsome, and straight. He must have been well over 6 foot tall. Slim. He walked. The moment he disappeared, through the men and out, then the thing broke loose. Japanese gave us a lecture. Major Fujiwara in Japanese and Kuniska interpreting. It was threats, complete threats to those who will not be patriotic enough to join the Japanese. And they should pick up cudgels on behalf of their slave nation to fight the British. The British have gone. They've been defeated. And he said that we have made now Captain Mohn Singh your supreme commander, General Mohn Singh. Within minutes, he got a 4-star general's rank. He was a slight figure, unimpressive. He was a ranker. He rose from the ranks. The British used to pick up rankers from the various regiments, make them pass the army special exam, then nominate them for Sanders before and then later to Dehradun, Intermediate Academy. So he became all of a sudden our major general. After the threatening speech of Fujiwara, he came up. His speech was not less threatening. He was squealing, standing on top, his voice most unimpressive, and said that we must join the Japanese, we must join the Indian National Army and his command, and they'll fight for the freedom of India. British have got no strength left to fight. They are in full flight in Burma, and the Japanese will be soon in India. So there was that. Then they gave us the Indian national song. Indian national song was produced. First they made a song which was Iqbal, the Muslim poet's thing about India, a patriotic song. Then they changed their minds then and there and found a song from Tagore, the great Bengali poet. Jai Ho, Jai Ho, Jai Ho. So they're very moving Tagore into this song. So next morning we were told, and that night was horrible. We had no latrines, no places to go to. So since our battalion, we were sitting there together. We had our picks and shovels, God knows where they paid from. So by platoons, we dug out pits and latrines. And it was a horrible sight. For every bed, you couldn't hold it, you couldn't control it. So we had to use all latrines. In the morning, the army began to berate us. You dirty chaps, we can smell you here. So, some of us got up. We started shouting. Where do you want us to go? You got us locked up here for the last 24 hours and so on and so forth. And any time these Indian National Army people found us lacking or doing something wrong, they would insult and rebuke and laugh and jeer. The whole thing changed overnight. We found same Indian people with different attitudes. So they took our nominal roles. Then and there we discovered that 15,000 people had joined the Japanese, then and there. Their officers were joined before upcountry when they were caught in Sanzo. So they were told to go to Bidadari camp. It was near Singapore, Hutted camp. 22,000 of us were sent 17 miles away to Nisun camp. They were the barracks, beautiful barracks made, double-storied buildings, beautiful offices, bungalows, double-storied bungalows for the Hong Kong Singapore Royal Artillery Regiments. HKSRA, Hong Kong Singapore Royal Artillery, HKSRA units. We arrived there. They were double-storied barracks, beautifully modern buildings. And men got in there, and men were allotted barracks, and we got into one big building, British officers, single quarters. We got there. There we joined up with the 3rd Cavalry officers, magnificent lot, Hari Badwar, Captain Hari Badwar, and Captain Dargalkar. Dargalkar was a Marathi. He was from Bombay. Which state he was, I forgot the state. He was a Maratha. And Hari Badwar was a Punjabi Hindu. His father was a puny judge. He retired and he went to Cambridge, a highly educated chap, razor sharp mind. And so we were there. And then the Indian National Army people, a chap called Captain Gurbak Singh, another Sikh, for 1st 14th Punjab Regiment, same regiment as Mohan Singh. He came and gave us a lecture, and he was saying that he was kept on shouting, we would all be shot if we don't join. We would all be shot if we don't join. So by the evening, I told Hari Bhadwa, I said, Hari, I think they are going to shoot us, you know. First they pick us up, the officers, and then the rest, NCOs and men. He said, no, our two allies will save us. Who are your two allies? I said, they've lost, they're gone. Americans have suffered the great bashing at Pearl Harbor. They have lost Philippines and so on. He said, no, two allies. Who are your two allies? He said, the Indian inefficiency and the Sikh intrigue will save us. Sikh intrigue. Sikhs are great intriguers, you see. So we laughed about it, and the lie began to go on. Then dysentery broke through. Dysentery broke through, and the men were dying like flies. So, because the plumbing got choked up with the men using the flushes and things like that, and all the water supply was very bad. So, we took turns, the officers. We said, unless we go in to clean the bloody sewers, men are not going in. Because the men are accost-ridden men. The Hindus will not touch anything, and the Muslims will not touch any urine and excreta. So I led my battalion. I said, all right, I'm going to get in this bloody sewer. So I took my shirt off and everything off and jumped into the bloody sewer waist deep. So I took a stick and a poke and just said, oh, I'll do something. Then the men jumped at me. They said, if he's gone, we'll go. So we cleaned the sewers, cleaned the plumbing, got the water running. And it was a subject of derision by the Indian National Army people. Your bloody officers, they are bloody cowards. Look at them, they're doing this, cleaning shit, rather than put on the uniforms and you're bloody cowards, you're bloody slaves. This thing was going on. Senior, sandal-stained officers, this Colonel Bonesley I told you from Galwal, he quietly slipped in the irony. There was another Sikh officer called Narinjan Singh Gill, Lieutenant Colonel, great staff officer, first Indian Lieutenant Colonel, and then Bonsley was second, in 3rd Indian Corps headquarters. He began to have sessions in the evening, calling us and what to do and not to do, philosophizing about our role, you see. He then used to call us separately. He was a heavy boozer. Come on, have a drink, have a drink. So we served a few drinks. Whiskey was still available a little bit, though we had broken all our whiskey bottles and gin bottles and beer bottles the night before the surrender. Because not to repeat, have a repetition of rape of Nanking, where they looted the wine and whiskey and raped the whole town. So he told me that to do what my conscience will tell me to do. Never do anything against your conscience. Now, you see, leaving a little doubt. One way he would say join, next one said, I didn't say join. I said, follow your conscience, you see. So we were very confused. And then, during our conversations with them and one thing or the other, they discovered that we were goners. We would not join. So they began to send us to working parties here and there. The men, Punjabi men of the 22nd Mountain Regiment, 22nd, 21st Mountain Regiment. You can say oblique 21, 22nd, I'm confused. With the Subedar Major, the Viceroy Commissioned Officer, and a captain called Parshotam Ram. Great character. So we were moved together down the jolly old Mandai Road, same place where we fought. And we went to a camp called Karanji Camp, just on the tip of the causeway. Causeway of Singapore, Karanji Camp, K-R-A-N-G-I. We settled there. No barbed wire around us, no guards around us, just left alone. But we made it a rule never to take any advantages. Because the moment we begin to take advantages, then they'll immediately grab us and they say, you're breaking rules and do this and do that. and the civilian population is to contact us there. Finally, we were moved, the 2nd Baluch, my battalion, we were moved to Tenga Aerodrome within about a month. This was in about the month of April. Tenga Aerodrome. And the Jeffs began to build these innumerable runways. There we were, finally, 4,000 prisoners of war working there. You know, cross runways, cross. Big building. We stayed in kind of a wooded huts, and we made our own huts. And suddenly, one day, my men came to me. I was standing at the runway. Because Jeffs used to take officers to work outside. But first we fought them, that you cannot make the officers work. Once they agreed, then I volunteered to go and work outside. I said, hey, it will give me a little something to do outside, and go with my men, and you know, we'll have some rapport with my men. I was standing at the runway, and one man came to me, he said, look, we found a dump in that Tenga aerodrome area, in the wooded part of it, thick wooded part of it. They dug caves out, and there were enough rations of cigarettes and things left by the British to last us quite a few months. When we found it, I said, cover the place up and let's sit down and organize. So we organized taking. First, I said, take the cigarettes out. They were wild woodbine cigarettes. British tube rations. Then they were flour for Indian soldiers. Then there were a hell of a lot of tins of thousands of cases of tins of meat and vegetable and bully beef and Irish stew. Now our men, the Muslims wouldn't eat the meat because they said this is not kosher. The Hindu, only Hindu company was my battalion who did not join the Japanese, the Dogra company. They stayed with us. After they were recovered from the thing and wounded came, they were complete company again. While their company commander one day went and joined the Japanese, Prem Kumar Saigal. And he was the man, Captain Saigal, who used to convey to my CO once or twice that I was slightly unhinged and I'm anti-British. And they were watching me. You know, British officers came, Prem Kumar Saigal says. And then later when they discovered he joined the INA and I did not, and I was standing up to fight at every inch, then they changed their minds. Good God. So I told him, to this day, Phil Davis is there. He's 84-year-old. He came here. So I told him, he mentioned Prem Kumar Saigal. I said, Phil, then you were praising him in front of me. No, for heaven's sake, stop praising him. He joined the bloody Japanese. Oh, yes, old boy, I'm sorry. I said, still the impression is in your mind that Phil, that Prem Kumar Saigal was a better man than me. He was senior then. He was the captain. I was the second lieutenant. See? So I used to always get a bit burnt up. So the meat and vegetables, we distributed among the officers in other camps when we eat it. Because there was so much. So we had, and the Japs never found out till the very end. Then our men began to pick it up and sell it to the Chinese. Chinese would buy it. So that period finished 4 months, and then we were moved to a Salita camp. Officers and men, we went up there. And then they were fed up with us. So they took away the officers. They took us out and put us in a separation camp, as opposed to a concentration camp. Men were being taken regularly to the concentration camp and being beaten there regularly. But for my battalion, they didn't know whom to pick up. We had organized in such a way that the men and NCOs and Viceroy Commission officers knew. We told them, put the blame on us, say these very officers. They're influential among men, and they're not letting them go. I, Captain Durrani, senior than me, Abrar was my batchmate, Timaya was with us, this Captain Timaya, Timaya's brother, our doctor, and all that. So we just stood there. When the INA used to come and ask us, I said, go and ask the bloody men. We are in there, but yeah, what do you want me to do? Keep being killed by our men? Like this, we kept the balance up. Finally, they got fed up and took us to his concentration camp. Kept us hungry and thirsty for 4 days. Pitched two tents on these bloody brown big ants. We got in and we got attacked by bloody brown ants. And there was one Sikh, Subedar Major, from 6th First Punjab Regiment who had not joined the IRA. And he was sleeping next to me. I had to put up with his bloody body smell, long hair Sikh. And he was a very nice man. Absolutely frustrated. So he didn't join the Japanese. While all the Sikhs had joined. So that camp, we stayed there for about 2 weeks. And then the INA people came to visit us. This Major Aziz I told you about, he cited me to go as his defense witness later in India. And a few other officers, and even Prem Kumar Sagar from my battalion came. And they said, we are sorry for you, but we look after you. So I told Sagar, as you stupid bastard, send me a blanket, send me a bedsheet, send me a pillow. Which he did, grudgingly. They were afraid, because if they favor us too much, the INA will grab him, because they'd got into the INA's net, you see. So then from there, they took us to another camp, to a barrack, two barracks they moved us. Some 14 Viceroy Commission officers came and joined us. We were about 14. In a small room like this, 14 of us used to sleep. And then they said, you dig trenches. 6 foot by 6 foot by 3 foot. 6 foot deep, 6 foot long, 3 foot wide. We used to dig the whole day. Sea gods used to come and abuse us. So I got over, I said, come in, I'll talk to you. I said, you see, if I join the INA, I'll be an officer. I would be an officer, you'll be a soldier, and I'll come for you. I've got all your names, I'll come for you one by one. He said, you're right. Sikh is very stupid. You're right. So he went and told others, and the two came to me and said, you are absolutely right. And they began to abuse themselves. These bloody stupid motherfuckers, Sikhs, we are like this. So on and so on. And he said, we are like that, and we would not treat you anymore. So I went back and gave the good tidings to others. No, you won't be bothered by the Sikhs. Anyhow, one night, there was a Singhara Singh, a three-stripe Havaldar. He was made a captain, and he was the beast of Belsen of the bloody INA. He came and threateningly told us to get into this room, into this barrack, into that barrack. And he said, we are going to say goodbye to you tonight. Gave us the impression that they are going to kill us all. We were about 14 officers there. So they took us in a closed truck with flaps down, and this pitch darkness took us. So we were speculating. Then we got us off the truck near the straits to a beach. And they tied us up and walked up. So we walked up. I was tied up to a chap called Captain Binturi from Mysore State Forces. Old man, bad teeth. He began to cry. So I said, don't cry, for God's sake. I'm with you. Why are you crying? Don't cry. But he was crying, whimpering. Lost his nerve. As we got to the thing, suddenly they were bloody lanterns, the lights, and who appears in front of us? Bloody Mohan Singh. Come on, come on, be my guest, come along, have a party. You know, that broke our reserve so much, we all looked slightly foolish.